Reading this morning from Friedrich Buchner. How they do live on, those giants of our childhood, and how well they manage to take even death in their stride, because although death can put an end to them right enough, it can never put an end to our relationship with them. Wherever or however else they may have come to life since, it is beyond a doubt that they live still in us. Memory is more than a looking back in time that is no longer. It is a looking out into another kind of time altogether, where everything that ever was continues, not just to be, but to grow and to change with the life that is in it still. The people we loved, the people who loved us, the people who, for good or ill, taught us things. Dead and gone, though they may be, as we come to understand them in new ways, it is though they come to understand us, and through them we come to understand ourselves in new ways, too. Who knows what the phrase "the community of saints" means, but surely it means more than just that we are all of us haunted by ghosts. They are not ghosts. These people we once knew are not just echoes of voices that have years since ceased to speak, but saints in the sense that through them something of the power and richness of life itself not only touched us once long ago, but continues to touch us today. To think of them is a matter not only of remembering them as they used to be, but of seeing and hearing them as in some sense they are now. If they had things to say to us then, they have things to say to us now too.
Now as we listen to a lovely piano piece, we'll complete creating our altar of remembrance. If you've just come in and are still filling out your names on leaves of people you'd like to remember, or if you've brought a photo, both Betsy and Carol will be up here finishing off the altar. Please bring them forward or raise your hands and they'll get it from you.
Thank you.
Yesterday was All Souls Day on the calendar, a day when people around the world pause to remember the dead. And each year on the Sunday closest to this day, we as a congregation do the same. Of course, as the words we shared during our chalice lighting this morning remind us, we remember those who have gone before in all seasons of the year and at many different times in our lives. But this day is a special day to remember them. It's a day observed in many different ways and in many religious traditions, from Christian to pagan. Other world religions also have similar holidays, perhaps some of them at different times of the year. These traditions may all teach very different things about death and immortality, but they all seem to agree that there is a value for those of us who live on to take time to remember those individuals who have touched our lives with theirs, but are no longer with us. You know, the word remembering itself, I think, is an interesting word. Its Latin root simply means to be mindful of again or to bring to mind again. But I like to think of the word in even a stronger and more physical way. You know, in the sense of remembering the dead, we sort of put them back together when we remember them. We put flesh back on their bones. We put breath back in their lungs. We put smiles back on their faces. In a sense, we bring them back to life and we renew our relationship with them. The celebration of All Souls is not about simply recalling someone from the distant past, but rather is about engaging with them now. In the celebration of All Souls Day, we actually celebrate a present relationship and not a closed chapter from the past. On this day and on every day we remember them, they live on. Many of you know I spend some time in Mexico, and during my visits to Mexico, I've really become fascinated with how Mexicans view death and their relationship with the dead. Death is always right in front of you in Mexico. Many of you would probably be shocked to walk down the main street of San Miguel and walk right by the casket builder's shop with a big display window featuring his work products right there on the main street. Death is not hidden. It's not unmentioned. It's part of life. Depictions of skeletons are everywhere in Mexico. Walk into any shop and there will be skeletons for sale. Now, they're not like our Halloween skeletons. They are well-dressed and depicted doing all those things that one does in life. Cooking, being a barber, dancing, playing cards, playing musical instruments. The calacas, which is the word for skeleton, are not intended to be scary. But rather, they suggest that even in death, we continue to be who we are, and not some anonymous, undefined soul. In Mexico, la vida and la muerte, life and death, flow together. Speaking about El Día de los Muertos, which is All Souls Day, the Day of the Dead, in Mexico, Margaret Atwood wrote, "In Mexico, they do this festival the right way. Bright candy skulls, family picnics on the graves, a plate set out for each individual guest, a candle for the soul. Everyone goes away happy, including the dead. But we've rejected this easy flow between dimensions. We want our dead unmentionable. We refuse to feed them. Our dead, as a result, are thinner, grayer, harder to hear, and hungrier." If we were in almost any Mexican village this past week, there would have been great celebrations. Not that there aren't celebrations with parades most all the time, but in particular this week. And in those parades, there would be smiling images of skeletons dressed up in holiday finery, playing instruments or dancing. And All Souls Day, families go to the cemetery, but not for a few minutes of quiet, respectful prayer at the grave of a loved one like we might do on that day or Memorial Day. No, they go for the whole day. And they bring a wonderful picnic feast and musical instruments, and they have a party on the grave with the deceased loved ones. It's not a day of sadness, but a day of happiness and renewed relationship. For them, the dead live on, and it's not so much in some distant place of their Catholic theology. But on this day especially, they're just right in the village with their family. They don't just engage with them in the cemetery either. There'll be a sugar skull with the name of the deceased person in a prominent place of the family home. And marigold petals will be strewn on the sidewalk leading up to the house. It seems that the dead forget their way after a while, and this reminds them of how to come back home. The family will all gather and often make the deceased person's favorite meal for him or her. The dead take part in the conversation and the festivities of the day. It's a happy day when everybody for the day is together again. I don't want to suggest that Mexicans do not mourn their dead. They do. And of course they experience the loss of loved ones just as we do, and they do their share of weeping and mourning. But somehow they come to a place where they don't so much think of them as dead, but just as our hymn said, as gone before and even still with us. Today our dead rise up to be with us right here in this room because we brought them here in our hearts. Among us here, there are many different views as to whether or not everything ends with the death of our bodies, or if our spirit or energy continues to exist in some way. Ever since I can remember, I personally have always had a sense that life goes beyond the biological limits of the body, and as I've been with people in death, that feeling's only become stronger for me. But for me, it's not based on some particular theological teaching, just my perception and my experience of the world. But theologies of life after death are not what I want to focus on today. But I do want to talk about our immortality and that of those whom we love in another sense. There is no doubt that we will live on in the hearts and in the lives of those whom we loved and who loved us. The chain even goes to successive generations when we share our memories and pass on what we were given by our departed friends and family to the generations after us. The dead only die if they die in our hearts. Today I invite you to be in relationship with those who live on with you. Now let me preface that discussion by saying I know that there were those among us who have painful memories of parents or grandparents. Not all memories are good ones, and sometimes we have to work hard to move away from those painful memories. I understand that. But at other times, even engagement with some painful memories can be productive for us. I'll tell you a story of a woman who said that she had been challenged by her relationship with her mother and had worked for years to make sense of some of the pain she suffered from the way that she was treated as a child. She said she now felt such a weight lifted because she finally had reconciled with her mother. And asked how her mother felt, she looked surprised. She said, "I have no idea. She died 20 years ago." Our relationship with those from our past continue to evolve long after they're gone. Not a day goes by in my life when those who were closest to me and have passed away don't rise up. I've come to realize that those who've gone before me, as we heard in that reading this morning, still have a great deal to say to me and I to them. And there are a couple of people who rise up frequently in my life. Now, I've shared with you some about them before, shared with you other stories, but as I was preparing this sermon, I thought these are the two that still need to be shared again. One, some of you knew, was Uncle T, Dr. Thomas Richner, who lived with my partner Malcolm and I for many years. Particularly comes to me at this time because his birthday is November 5th. He would be 102 on Tuesday if he were still here. He was a famous concert pianist, particularly noted for his performance of music. And it was actually just about a year ago, I was traveling with my usual traveling buddy, NPR, and they were playing on one of the classical stations a recording of the Mozart Piano Concerto in C major, K330. I don't know them all that way, but I know this one particularly because it was Uncle T's piece. Okay. He won the Nomburg playing that piece in 1940, and it launched his career, and he played it his entire life, probably every day. So I was drawn into the performance, particularly on this performance, because the little nuances of interpretation were exactly what Uncle T did with the music. I could actually see him doing it. And I really was hoping that that announcer was going to say at the end who was playing, because I was just sure it had to be one of his students, somebody who had studied the piece with him. But it turned out it was an old recording of Uncle T himself performing the piece that they had dug up in their archives. When I heard that recording, which I have many copies of, when I hear it again, Uncle T's just always instantly back with me. But in the past couple of years, my partner Malcolm, who's also a concert pianist, has been performing that same piece, which was never in his repertoire before. And each time he does, Uncle T rises up for me, I'm sure for him too. But there's so much more about this man than his musical performance that still speaks to me. You know, I constantly find myself seeing life through the lens he provided, a lens that was of love and right relationship, one with a real sense of humor, and being grateful for every one of life's blessings. He had a lot of silly, to say kindly, little sayings about life, and they're stuck in me. Rarely does a day go by when I don't catch myself saying, as Uncle T would say, and each time, of course, he lives on. The other person, who I also have mentioned to you before, is my maternal grandmother, who rises up with great regularity in my life. She'd been a school teacher, and in her senior years, I was her only devoted pupil. She sparked curiosity in all things, showed me beauty in art and nature and in music. She introduced me to the piano, to liberal religion, to canasta. The canaster didn't stick. I can't remember how to play canaster. But some of the others stuck a little bit. I think she's responsible for me being here. But with her, there was always something to learn. But there was more that she taught by just the way she lived. She had this practice of always seeing the good in another person. She never spoke badly of anybody. And when challenged by someone's really ugly behavior, her reaction would always be to look beyond it and say something good about the person. Sometimes that would really frustrate me as a child. But when I became a lawyer working in the criminal courts, either as a prosecutor or representing some of these people who had done some pretty bad things, the memory of my grandmother doing this started to revisit me. And to my surprise, it always seemed to cause me to find some bit of good in even the most hardened criminal. For my second birthday, my grandmother hooked a Peter Rabbit rug for my bedroom. I may have told you about this rug before. I was actually too young to remember getting it, but it has the date hooked into the rug, so I know when it was. But I remember being in my room on the floor as a childhood. And as I got older, I put it into mothballs, thinking that I had outgrown it. But today that rug hangs, framed in a frame that my father made in the living room of our lake cottage. It's a rather silly thing to hang in your living room. Each time I walk into that room, though, my grandmother comes back to life. The rug constantly reminds me of all the lessons I learned, particularly from those childhood stories that she read to me. You know, that rug I know took months to make. I saw her hook rugs all her life. And I think how each time she hooked that piece of wool and pulled it through that burlap backing, she was thinking of me. And that just feels wonderful to think that. You know, I got to tell you an aside. She was very dedicated to this craft of hooking rugs and very proud of her work. She was also a very proper speaker of the English language, never used familiar or slang expressions, and didn't even know what most of them meant, I'm quite sure. One time in a discussion where they were sort of trying to break the ice with a group of people, someone said, let's tell each other what our hobbies are. She piped right up. She told the whole gathering that she was a hooker. The fun memories are good, too. Sometimes, even folks generations earlier than us that we did not even know live on in us. I never knew my great-grandfather, who was a Methodist minister. But on the path to ministry, I discovered him in the margins and notes and papers inserted in his old Bible and in the preaching coat that I discovered in an old trunk in an attic. As the next minister to come along in this family, I feel somehow that he kind of lives on in me too. I'm sure you have stories just like these of folks who regularly rise up for you. I think about my grandmother and Uncle T, and as I do, I realize that they were not just leading their lives in ways that intersected with mine, but there was something very conscious about creating those memories. And I'm so glad that there was. I've been thinking, talking with Malcolm about it too, about our relationship to our nieces and nephews. It's not just about the interactions we have with them now. It's about what we give them that they will live with beyond us. And it might even help sustain them in some way when we're gone. You know, I hope we're all around for a long time to come. But you know, this day I think is a good time not just to remember those whom we hold in our hearts fondly, but also to think for a minute about how we might be remembered, maybe on some All Souls Day like this one, way in the future. It's not a morbid thought. I think it might serve to improve the quality of our relationships even right now. When we're gone, our lives will still be speaking. If we are parents or grandparents who spend valuable time with our children or grandchildren, then we'll live on in them. If we are teachers, we'll live on in our students. If we're musicians, we'll live on in our music. Artists and crafters will live on in their creations. Scientists in their discoveries. Counselors in the good advice given. A good cook in the recipes he or she passes on. Even generations later, we live on when somebody carries on a tradition, discovers us in a genealogy, or meets us in some item in an old attic trunk. When we live on, whether we may live on elsewhere in the world beyond our knowing, but for sure we live on here, in the lives we touched, just as those who've gone before us live on in our lives. And I think that when we're gone, we'll say, just as those who have gone before us are saying to us now, these words of Mary Fry. Do not stand by my grave and weep. I'm not there. I do not sleep. I'm 1,000 winds that blow. I'm the diamond glint on snow. I'm the sunlight on ripened grain. I am the gentle autumn's rain. When you awake in the morning hush, I am the swift uplifting rush of quiet birds in circling flight. I am the soft star that shines at night. Do not stand at my grave and cry. I am not there. I did not die. ¶¶